Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests, who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bhattori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP, or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone, and to our viewers from Far East, good night.
Welcome back to week 8 of season 3. Our show is about impact investment, and the theme of this season is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Today, we are going to travel to another side of the world, to Taiwan. And it is amazing to see that in all parts of the world, impact investing is getting momentum and various people are working to make it the new normal, so we are not alone. As an example, here in Switzerland, we have SIA, Swiss Impact Investment Association, to build impact investing ecosystem. And in Taiwan, there is TIA, Taiwan Impact Investment Association, which is also set to attract and mobilize market capital in the pursuit of returns while supporting sustainable development goals. They also want to align development efforts for a sound impact investing ecosystem in Taiwan that connects the peers around the globe. Isn't it amazing, Ben?
It's exactly.
So the new normal is knocking at all the doors and soon behind yours.
Exactly. And although we are very aware that people from Canada to Far East, to Japan, to Asia, they're all watching it. But still, before we continue, a quick reminder to you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, not to miss any future exciting episodes. And the channel is very easy. It's youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
And again, good news for those who want to learn about impact investing and create or transform into profitable business with impact. In the next 4 months, we are going to conduct 4 trainings, which will transform your business and business idea into huge success. The topics of the trainings are impact inclusion and impact measurement. How do you measure impact and include it in your business? How do you develop your business successfully in this sector? How to find and select investors? And of course, also about pitching and negotiation skills. So check out chamomile.ch, take opportunity and learn with us. Before we invite our guest, Ben, do you want to share an amazing story for today?
Yeah. I again want to go back to my country, which again makes me proud.
Netherlands.
Of course. So again, a new trend started there. For those who do not know ABP, ABP is the pension fund in Netherlands for all the people who work for the Dutch government or in the education sector. And it is quite big. It is around, they have, I think, around 400 billion asset under management. They made history this week by coming forward and declaring that they will not invest in oil and gas sector anymore. This is wonderful since ABP has the most investment in fossil fuel than any other pension funds in Netherlands. It's nearly 2% of their whole total portfolio.
Wow, that's indeed a huge impact and action. Tell us more.
Exactly. So there has been, or there are smaller pension funds in Netherlands like PME and others who have made similar kind of commitments in the past. But in my opinion, the impact really happens, or the ball really starts rolling, when big guys like ABP make such a decision. And I'm very sure and I'm very hopeful that now more and more big pension funds will start following this trend. And ABP is one of the biggest in Netherlands, but not only the big, I'm talking of the big Dutch pension funds, but also the Germans, the Scandinavians and all that. And the fact that they are doing it is the reason they are doing it and they have to do it is because if they really care for their customers, they have to retain the asset value of their portfolios, which will be used in the coming decades to pay for the pension. But do not get me wrong.
I hope they will not get you wrong. Please explain. No.
It takes some time for the impact of this decision to reach the ground level and to reach the market. In fact, ABP mentioned that they will not invest in fossil fuel going forward, but they did not talk about the investment they already have. So to take that, to keep that investment going, but from my point of view, since the situation is so dire that we all know about it, about the environment, so I'm very happy. Even small steps or small news like this has a huge impact on the future of our planet and our environment.
Absolutely. But such huge asset reallocation won't be easy, of course, because the massive amount of assets will have to be liquidated and withdrawn without impacting the market volatility. And that would create huge, large shock on the market otherwise.
I can tell a short story about this. It happened in the Netherlands quite a couple of decades ago when the Dutch government decided to liquidate a part of their gold, reservoir. Mm-hmm. But they mentioned it in the market. And the moment they mentioned it in the market, the whole gold price plummeted. So when they liquidated that asset, they lost quite a considerable amount of value because the value went down. So I'm sure ABP will not do that kind of mistake.
Right. And in all our programs, we have spoken always on what you say in the Netherlands, the alpha topics like politics, environment, climate change, investment, and finance. And we haven't covered actually the beta direction too much, like pure technology. Once we had a guest we talk about blockchain. So today we intend to do that and discuss on the role of impact investment in this beta world. For this purpose, we are traveling to a faraway country, which I mentioned already, to Taiwan. And there we meet an old friend of Ben, a technologist turned legislator and too many known as crypto congressmen. So maybe you can introduce our guest of today. And first, let's invite him here in our studio.
Welcome, Jason.
Jason, so welcome.
Thank you so much, Ben and Svita, for having me. It's great to join you online, and I'm so happy to see the beautiful Swiss city in your background. I look forward to returning soon. I
you
imagine it's Zurich.
Exactly. You have to come back.
Absolutely.
So I do this introduction.
Yes.
So a very short introduction for our viewers, for Jason. So Jason is a legislator at large from Taiwan, and he oversees technology development and innovation. And among the crucial legislations he has introduced and passed, including FinTech Sandbox Act, Self-Driving Vehicle Act, which I find very interesting, Angel Investment Act, Cybersecurity Management Act, and Virtual Currency Guidelines. Jason is a very strong proponent for cryptocurrency and blockchain. He's credited for launching Asia's Blockchain Alliance, as well as Taiwan's Parliamentary Coalition for Blockchain and Self-Regulatory Organization. Next to that, he also co-founded TEDx in Taipei. You also spoke at TEDx.
Right.
And he serves as TEDx Senior Ambassador to Asia. And he's Draper Hills Fellow at Stanford University Center for Democracy Development and Rule of Law.
So I think the discussion today will be quite technical, which is good. So people focus, and I will make sure that you guys are not too technical that everyone can understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, we have to speak in a language that everybody can understand. So Jason, tell us a little bit more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as shared by Ben, that I am a rare breed of entrepreneur and a public policy maker. So for the past 10 years, I've devoted myself in building platforms for sharing ideas. So I co-founded TEDx Taipei in 2019, 2009 and ran the conference from 2009 to 2016 and became the TEDx ambassador in Asia. And in the end of 2015, I was nominated as a legislator at large and mainly focusing on developing legislations and policies for innovation and technology. And this is really critical. As we know, today's technology is really becoming a disruptive force for public sectors. And so when it comes to, you know, self-driving cars and also the use of data, machine learning, AI, and cybersecurity, and all of this are really quite concerned about the public safety and as well as the public welfare and the benefit. So since then, I've been kind of developing Taiwan as the island for technology innovation. And obviously, Taiwan come from a long history of semiconductor chip making powerhouse and as well as global supply chain. But really, in recent days, it's all about convergence of software and hardware. And since I left government in 2020, I have served in several nonprofit organizations. And most recently, I am the vice president for Taiwan FinTech Association, where my job is to bridge the financial institutions with technology companies, and also from that angle and perspective to look at impact investment as well, and how do we facilitate financial inclusion as well as a sustainability investment.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks a lot. Last time we spoke, you mentioned that family offices, ultra high net worth individuals, old families in Taiwan are not only aware of impact investment, but also actively seeking for projects and funds around the world to invest in. But please, let's put everyone on the same page. What is impact investment to you personally? So we make sure that we talk about the same thing.
Well, I think if you look at today's development of capitalism, there are basically three types of capitalism. One is a state capitalism, and another one is a shareholder capitalism, which is a capitalism that basically practiced in the Western world, in the most countries in Europe and in the U.S. But what I would argue for the impact investment is what I call a stakeholder capitalism, mm-hmm. which is the benefits and the growth and achievement of investment is shared by its stakeholders, and it's considered more than just pure financial returns, but it also has a lot of social impact as well as the sustainability. So for me personally, everything we do, ranging from entrepreneurship to personal finance to education, it all has a component of how do we create and enable impact through the efforts that we put in to create a better society, and as well as creating, whether it's businesses or new technologies or new healthcare services. So I feel going forward, every investment should be an impact investment. We can no longer allow the companies to invest in the projects that have damage and harms to our society and environment and the future children's growth.
Well, that's amazing. Even though you are on the other part of the world, seems like we do understand each other what we are talking about. So why do you think Asia, especially Taiwan, has a strong role to play in advocating and promoting impact investment?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at today's world, Asia is really the world's fastest growing population. And also it has world's youngest population. And countries such as Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam are growing rapidly, and their internet coverage and as well as the so-called unbanked population is above 60 to 70%. And so there's a huge demand there in terms of how do we bridge capital with the technology and the access to finance. And so I feel Asia is important because the larger of the the development of economy will be concentrated in this part of the world. And Taiwan, being at the important part of the Asia, really plays a critical role because we are a powerhouse for technology development and as well as the semiconductor chips and the 5G equipment. And for all the things that we are going to use in the future in medical care, in the transportation, and in the infrastructure building, everything that we will use has to do with the semiconductor and as well as the other computer electronics. So Taiwan has prospered over the last three decades because of the technology boom. And now we've come to a point where companies such as TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Corporation, must rethink the environment impact as well as the sustainability component of the chips that it makes, and also how does a company like TSMC develop relationships and translate that element of influences to its clients as well as upstream material suppliers and etc. And so I feel everything that Taiwan makes used to be MIT, made in Taiwan, but now it has to be IIT, Impact of in Taiwan. So I think that's what I mean by it. It's very important that to develop this. Yeah.
Thank you very, very much.
Did you know about TIA, Taiwan Impact Investment Association?
I know. Yeah, the CEO DK Wu is a personal friend of mine. I'm a good friend of them, and we work together. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, perfect. No, another thing, because you last time told me that your present president Tsai Ing-wen is also a very strong proponent of impact investment. Can you give some concrete examples of her actions or activities in promoting impact investment?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was in the parliament, I amended the corporation law to include the so-called beneficial corporation, which is basically known as B Corp in the West. It's for companies that can set up to account for more than just profit and loss, but also social responsibility and as well as sustainability. And so since then, on the parliament level, the country has already provided the governing laws for corporations to look at beyond profit and loss and the bottom line. And it addresses also environmental concerns as well as the sustainabilities and the social responsibilities. And our President Tsai, July in the Taiwan Investment Forum, Taiwan Investment Summit, has opening a remark that in the future, Taiwan will focus on three directions. One is ESG investing, and the other is responsible innovation, and lastly is financial inclusion. So it's from our president's message to have a clear guideline and a direct approach for our corporations and also legislative and executive branches to address it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. I mean, not in many countries the presidents are defining such direction, right? So that's clearly amazing. So the next question is about the high-tech industry of Taiwan, which of course is one of the most important industries in your country. And you had also mentioned a few times of their very strong focus on impact investment and sustainability. Can you maybe please give us some concrete examples of the companies, how sustainable are they, what are they doing, high-tech industry in this sector?
Yeah, absolutely. Taiwan, although it's a small island and also considerably a smaller market compared to Japan, South Korea, or other countries in Southeast Asia, for example, like Vietnam and Indonesia that I just mentioned. But really, since early 70s, Taiwan has developed itself as the technology powerhouse and also the production hub for semiconductor and DRAM and memories and GPU cards, graphic cards, and also electric vehicles components. And so today's iPhones are mainly made by Taiwanese manufacturer, Foxconn. Mm-hmm. And Tesla is assembled, and its parts come from Taiwan suppliers. About 60% of Tesla's parts are from Taiwan. And so Taiwan played this critical supply chain links among the global brands, ranging from cars to electronic appliances to mobile phones to computers and everything you know. And so companies that originated from Taiwan already have global practice standard with global brands like Apple, like Tesla. So for example, TSMC working with producing semiconductor chips for Apple computer, Apple's iPhones is now certified as renewable energy neutral, energy neutral suppliers. All its electricity must be green and renewable energy. So starting from TSMC, you can tell by hundreds of companies in its ecosystem are now compliant with green energy. And that creates a ripple effect among other companies that are working with ecosystem, bigger ecosystem outside of the semiconductor. And so Taiwan is now really positioned itself as the an island known for renewable energy practices. And so that's what I mean by our country is really pushing forward as our national program to develop ourselves as the sustainable island and sustainable economy.
Wow. And now we go to the next topic, that is the impact investment in the world of AI and crypto, which is
artificial intelligence,
which is quite very much your kind of strength. So what, in your opinion, is the role, or what role does impact investment has to play in the world of artificial intelligence?
Well, I think today's ESG is a very critical component for companies to look at its balance sheet. So it's more than just profit and loss, but it has to account for environment, corporate governance, and sustainability. But there are, you know, tens of thousands of companies out there, and AI can really play a role in collecting data and then developing models for countries or for corporations to understand what exactly it is doing to environment, what impact its carbon footprint is creating, and how do they create a prediction of the future model. Say I'm a car manufacturing companies, and I am producing the car parts that will basically produce carbon emission as well. But how do we optimize my production line and manufacturing capabilities to better fit in for the ESG requirements? And that basically where AI comes in, you know, and AI can analyze and train a large amount of data and to develop a optimized model for companies to follow. So that means that whenever their energy consumption is running low demand, they can turn off the energy consumption and provide their energy storage for other parts that are in demand for energy development. And essentially, as we converge and also collect this massive amount of data, cities and countries will then develop a so-called most optimal use of energy. And that can drastically downgrade and reduce the amount of carbon that's been produced, and in a fashion that we don't even see. And so that gives a sense of how exactly we can develop an algorithm that would potentially give corporations and governments ideas how to create the best ESG practices.
Jason, let's dig a little bit deeper here, because I have a big concern, especially when you start talking about ESG and impact investing. So for me, it's very different ESG from impact investing. So I wanted to ask you the following question, because Ben is, since many years, he has been speaking on the topic of evolution of values and technology. But in the present day, it seems that we live in the world where technology transcends human values. And that is why major software companies like Google, Facebook are often in the news nowadays, right? And they are not only collecting all data on you and us, but also running artificial intelligence on this data to create algorithms to manipulate it in the way that it starts influencing the way of how we are thinking. And is this very dangerous trend in the evolution of artificial intelligence? So why do you think that AI can also be used for impact investment, and who would also have interest in it? Can it be at all also impact investment?
Yeah, it is indeed a big concern with the development of these big tech giants, the amount of resources that they own and the capability and also the access they have to people's data. And you can tell by today's U.S. Congress is really pushing hard on Facebook to correct its data security and also data privacy practice. But really, I think today's technology companies must practice a sort of a self-regulatory moral principle. And I think we come at a time where our own very own privacy is being breached for the use of the commercial benefit by this big tech corporate companies. When I was a legislator in Taiwan's parliament, I am very concerned about this very trend that technology companies is far-reaching people's privacy and also data security. So I set up a law called Artificial Intelligence Development Principle Law in Taiwan. And it's a basic law that governs the development of the AI and the use of the algorithm for machine learning. And it gives the regulators a certain permission that will regulate the developer's ability to write codes and algorithm that will eventually suppresses humans' ability to recognize and then outpower our own very own judgment. And again, you know, big company, big corporations like Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Facebook must be held accountable for these type of things. And if you were asked me, what should this tech giant do to address this? I think they should set aside a independent research arm within their company, or invite researchers and scholars and even data scientists to provide the counter algorithm study for this type of what I call a malicious practice. So it's very important for government to step in at this point in time to regulate these tech companies. And so going back to AI and impact investments, it's very important that if we allow that the technologies continue to advance and then to have this dominant power over individuals, technology companies will become ever more powerful, that the amount of resources and the benefits and the profit they collect will outweigh nations. So governments must come out and then say, look, you know, it's, we need to set up a parameters, and some parts of your profit must be allocated for impact investment. That is that investing in the future of safe codes, clean network, and securities, and for this type of things, for them to have a counter investment type of the measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. No. It has to be controlled. I mean, that's what we have been advising, and also that the regulations have to be kicked in and pushed in, because if we leave things on voluntary effect, you see what is happening with Facebook and Google. Pure voluntary effect doesn't work. So
no.
One of the question I wanted to ask about is that both of us have spoken around the world on the topic of cryptocurrency and blockchain conferences and summits. And I know that I see the long-term value and the long-term effects of both blockchain and cryptocurrency for impact investment, because that's what has been always my angle. What is your opinion on the role of these blockchain and cryptocurrency?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for quite some time that blockchain and cryptocurrency have been viewed as somewhat a underground type of money transaction means. But now I think, as we can tell, that countries and governments begin to regulate it and to figure out ways that how do they include cryptocurrency as a mainstream product or commodities. And we've seen SEC that also comes out to say investors must be protected, and some forms of laws must be created to address these issues. But for me, the angle for crypto is not to replace fiat money. I feel the angle for cryptocurrency is to develop, or I should say, facilitate financial inclusion. If you look at today's world, a large part of our population is still unbanked. And people in Africa and in some parts of Southeast Asia are still without means to financial banking services. So they rely on their mobile banking. And sometimes these governments and states are uncertain and unreliable and unstable. So what if we create a interoperability and also stable platform that can allow different countries to transact money easily and without any friction, and also allow the general public and those unbanked to have the access to financial instruments? And that would be the ultimate goal for a cryptocurrency. It's not about replacing fiat currency or to go against any type of strong currency, but it is to develop and provide access for everyone in every corner to have financial instruments to the world directly.
Thank you. And for the audience who doesn't know, fiat currency is just the normal currency, like the dollars, euro, what we are using every day, which is controlled by the governments and by the central banks. So, but this is a very, very strong and good point you mentioned about the strength of blockchain and cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. But I think also you can look into not only bringing in people who do not have the, who are not, like you mentioned, the unbankable or who are outside of the financial structure, but we are also talking about registration of land. And on also like the refugees in the Jordan, where you can control their food and their income and everything on the blockchain. So that, and also we are aware of so many projects going on, like in Switzerland, the medical sector, the pharmas, they are using, because they want to control the whole supply line from end to end of every medicine they make. And they are trying to put it on blockchain so that there is no corruption in between, or there is no, how do you call it? sometimes, you know, chemicals get mixed up or they get put with fake chemicals and things like that, that everything remains clean. So these also are very, very strong aspects of the blockchain. And in Taiwan also, are you implementing blockchain in these kind of projects like land registration, government registrations and things like that?
Not so far with the land registration, but we are coming out with the so-called digital ID services. It's very similar to Estonia's e-residency, and we will basically keep the older records on blockchain and with a single digital ID unit. And also, I also want to mention that since you mentioned about the so-called authenticating medicine, and I think today's world where pandemic is still very much unresolved, it is very important to be able to have a transparent and immutable record-keeping platform, which I believe blockchain can provide such a platform, and also to be able to provide a trustable and as well as a secure authentication methods for all the vaccinations. So I think that's really, really, really important. And I also want to say that countries that are already thinking about so-called central bank digital currency, CDBC, are figuring out ways to provide digital access to people who are without identities, the refugees, and also people that are suffering from disasters, and also who are in need of a help. You mentioned about UN Food Program, and I'm involved on a SDG program with UN as well. And there's a lot that blockchain can do, more than just speculating Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Yeah,
Jason, we have a question from the audience.
Yeah.
So, hey, Jason, what do you think about decentralized banking system?
Yeah, it's a very important issue because as you know, the DeFi, the so-called decentralized finance, has become such a big thing. And over the last 12 to 18, 24 months because of COVID, the world is going crazy with NFT and DeFi, you know, earning, 200% annually for their investments. Banking has to wake up to this fact that tomorrow, it won't be another bank replace a bank. It will be a blockchain startup completely swept over the sector by providing better yields and much quicker loan authentication and insurance products, derivatives, and all sorts of things. So the very idea of removing intermediaries, and also if you look at Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper in 2008 for Bitcoin, it is to enable a peer-to-peer monetary transaction. And today we are exactly talking about that, to remove the banking services. So tomorrow's banks will be replaced by services like PayPal, like eBay, even like Twitter and Facebook, who owns a large amount of user data, and that will basically transact some sort of a digital currencies on their platform. And this is already happening because banking is somehow very strictly regulated by jurisdiction, but crypto is not. So banking, bank sector must wake up to this, and they must incorporate more technologies into their services and really think from the user's point of view in terms of how to develop a better services.
Thank you. And now going to the third segment, that is the impact investment in the new economy going forward. So governments around the world, like you just mentioned yourself, are trying to regulate crypto. So from Russia to Europe to America, everywhere. still in many countries, and especially I notice also among the intellectual circles, like I have some friends who are Nobel Prize winners, but they look very suspiciously towards crypto.
Well, and I also look suspicious.
But I know that during your tenure as a legislator in Taiwan, you were busy with designing and proposing crypto regulations. So what, in your opinion, can be done with the regulations that crypto, by crypto now I mean the cryptocurrency, will support impactful and sustainable investments? And how can impact investment be further promoted into the world of crypto investors by using regulations?
Yeah, so I'll give you some numbers. Today's Bitcoin market cap is about 90 billion, US dollars, and the total amount of the all cryptocurrency combined, the market cap is about two trillion. So if you look at this number, it's still relatively small compared to all the capital, including banking notes, stocks, and all sort of assets combined in the world, in the so-called physical asset world. But cryptocurrency is here to stay for a number of reasons. One is that all the institutions are coming in. So today's Bitcoin is at a price that is around 60,000, even though it sometimes has ups and downs, but always stayed at that level is because institutions now decided to back up that this asset class.
I remember when it was at 8, you know, and somehow
it's crazy. I wish I bought.
What is the value behind that it's suddenly 60 and not 8?
It's all in the perception of people, and also it's all in our minds. It's as if I think this cup of water is worth $100, it's worth $100. But if it's worth a penny, it's a penny. It's a mentality thing. But I think you can't drive it underground. The more you try to drive it underground or to suppress it, it goes to illegal activities such as drug dealing or human smuggling, drug trafficking, and also money laundering. So as a policymaker and also as a someone who's been a legislator, I want to call for government official regulations on this sector. It is only when governments around the world treat this as a business that needs to be regulated, and its business owners and the developers and the practitioners must be complied with the law, and its customers must be protected, that we will have the real future for the cryptocurrency in the future. But right now, I think we still haven't seen a universal practice on this. SEC, the new SEC chairman, Gary Gensler, he has a very clear understanding that he wants to regulate this. And I think countries like El Salvador is going too far, sometimes by without thinking thoroughly and already regulating the Bitcoin as a legal tender. So it attracts a lot of businesses, but also it attracts a lot of problems too. I think Singapore might be a good practice. Singapore has a very top-down approach going from their government, their MAS, which is their monetary authority regulator, to their state-owned banks, to the legislative branches. They all have a very integrated approach in terms of how to regulate this industry. They only allowed accredited investors to invest and also allow institutional investors to invest. So it can no longer be a wild, wild west. we must figure out a way to regulate it. And I'm firmly believe that regulation is needed. Yeah.
I don't know if this question is allowed. Are you also invest in cryptocurrencies?
You know, when I was a legislator, I own zero Bitcoin. But after I left government, I start to buying some Bitcoin, but the price was already quite high. So, you know, it's all about timing as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to wait another 5 or 10 years, then you will be billionaire. Maybe. Yeah? Who knows?
Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll set up an impact investment crypto fund. You know, using Bitcoin to do impact investment. Actually, that's the idea I'm working on right now. Is to develop a crypto coin impact investment fund.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Another question, Jason, because we are aware that some countries, some central banks in those countries are toying with the idea of digital currency. And you recently wrote an article on digital currencies by central banks. And you mentioned there that if properly implemented, it will support financial inclusion and bring banking facilities to the unbanked. Can you please elaborate a little bit more what you mean by that and how it would happen?
Yeah, I think central bank digital currency is somewhat against the traditional so-called crypto believers. Crypto believers are so-called decentralized, unregulated approach that they dreamed of this liberty of being able to transact money in their own free will. But I think the world still functions in order that governments need to provide a secure means and also the official recognizable digital currency, so that everyone can feel some sense of security. And so the CDBC, central bank digital currency, is born. Already some countries in Northern Europe are already experimenting it. I think Sweden is experimenting. I'm not sure if Switzerland is doing it. Maybe it does. But I know
here, maybe behind us, you know, under Parade Platz in Zurich. Usually they have a lot of secrets there. So.
Okay. And I know China is already testing at a large scale for their so-called digital RMB. You already tested over 100 million population. For a rollout for their digital RMB. But it's still very much a centralized approach that governments will then own and control the data of the money transaction of the people. So it raises concern about government's power and government's oversight of people's privacy and the data security. I think that CDBC can be best used in the underbanked countries such as Africa or the some parts in Southeast Asia, for example, countries like Philippines, where still 70% doesn't own a bank account, 70% of the population are unbanked. So if governments can provide a secure banking transaction that they don't have to go through banks or intermediary, that the average farmers can, make loans or borrow money or smaller loans to support their small business. If they need to, you know, start a restaurant, you know, things like that, they can have this so-called direct banking services. I think that would be very important. And the country to watch for this is really China. Because China's leader, Xi Jinping, has this concept of common prosperity. So that's why he's cracking down on tech giants like Alibaba and Tencent and JD.com. And they are asking them to donate money to create a better sort of common prosperity financial infrastructure. Where,
donating that or not?
Yeah, they are donating the money to it. So you can tell by the authoritarian regime and the power that a state has to regulate. Yeah, China.
In the China, the government says
you
do it.
Of course not. I'm in Taiwan. So we live in a liberal and democratic country. So we are quite safe here. Yeah. But But I think, you know, it's important to understand this technology. And also, as I share, that digital currency will not replace regular currency or the fiat currency. But it's important that we understand it and then evolve with it. Yeah.
And generally, I play the devil's advocate. But, you know, because of the increased scrutiny and control of the financial transactions around the world, some of the illegal business has been moving to crypto sector. You must have read that in the dark web, payments are done with crypto, or with against ransomware, payments are done in crypto. Because cryptocurrency becomes visible or traceable, usually when it is on an exchange, when it's being converted to a normal currency, to a fiat currency. So I know that still the amount is very small compared to the black money transactions in the normal currency. But going forward, can similar regulations like you are promoting be applied and implemented on the cryptocurrency transactions? Then, because this can be another way to kind of divert much investments towards a sustainable and impactful sector.
Yeah, you know, that's a very important issue to address. This very reason that the countries that are looking at this are now under the scrutiny of FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, particularly for the illegal money laundering and also the so-called terrorism. Drug trafficking and terrorism. Yeah. And so FATF published a new guideline in June 2019 called Travel Rules. It's basically demands all VASPs. VASPs means that virtual asset service providers to basically detailedly records the transaction flow from one entity to the other entity. And it must be completely recorded. And this has been a new norm for particularly crypto exchanges. So it's very important that you know, international organizations like FATF has already taken note of this. So I would say crypto exchanges must start complying, but otherwise I think they will run risk of being criminalized as the money laundry or terrorism financier. So it's very important to look at this, and we can never be too lenient for this. Yeah.
Okay. And I think we are running out of time. So I just wanted to ask you to share your call to action for our audience who are all watching you. What would be your call? What should all the people do?
So basically, I think that, well, first of all, impact investments should be every investment thesis. If you look at today's tech venture investment, we don't want to create another Facebook that uses our data and also steal our privacy for their very own profit-making purpose. I would say, you know, governments around the world should figure out a way to mobilize private capital for public purposes. And that requires a very deep thinking into how do we look at capitalism. And I want to, you know, call for so-called stakeholder capitalism for countries to look at investments more than just profit and loss, but it should really account for impact. And I also think that today's entrepreneurs, instead of thinking, you know, going IPO and also having huge financial gains for your venture endeavor, you should also think about how to give back. Because at the end of the day, we only have one Earth, one planet. And, you know, we wanted that the money and the capital that we spend is being invested in the ecosystem that will provide a better tomorrow, and also making impacts that can basically benefit the bottom 90% rather than serving the top 10%. Today's top 10% owns almost 90% of the world's wealth. And it is a time we rethink what is investment and what is impact investment. And every investment should be an impact investment thesis. That's my message.
Wow, Jason, thank you so much. It is awesome. Love your message, really. Thanks a lot for sharing your idea and vision on this topic. And we want to thank you for joining us today. And as a little gift, we would like to give you a honorary membership on Come On My platform. Just register, let us know, and we will upgrade it. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much
for your time. Jason,
thank you, Sveta. Thank you, Ben. Great talking to you. And let's do impact investment together.
Let's do that.
Yes,
let's
exactly.
do that. The new normal.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Can go, okay. Now you can go and sleep.
I'll have a glass of wine first. Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you, Jason.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Dear viewers, with this our show of today, the 8th episode, season 3 ends. If you like our show, please subscribe on YouTube channel, youtube.com/SwissImpact.
And I'm sorry, Sveta, but next week we will travel again.
Again?
But, mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe this time to a bit nearer country. So we are going to United Kingdom to hear of an amazing medtech project called Cradle, which is causing a revolution in the world of elder people. Mm-hmm. It is a successful example of an amazing project being funded by impact investors.
And we are all going to grow old one day or another day. So stay with us. To all SMEs who want to learn about impact investing, join in the courses which are published on Chamomile. Thank you for watching us today. Act for your future.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as human, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.